Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program was written by Virginia Mazur and is entitled The Root and the Flower. Raymond Massey, distinguished actor of stage and screen, is the narrator.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle dandy. Mind the music and the step, and with the gals be handy.
Some folks say that way back before the Revolution, British soldiers made up Yankee Doodle to poke fun at the Americans. This is the way they tell it. A certain Thomas Fitch of Norwalk in Connecticut, a captain in the American army, was leading his troops out to fight the Indians. His daughter Elizabeth was scandalized at the outlandish assortment of rags and tags they were wearing and calling uniforms. Just like a woman, she ran into the barnyard and grabbed up a handful of chicken feathers. Soldiers have to have plumes, she said.
Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his cap and called him Macaroni.
I can't prove it to you, but that's what they say. Anyway, the name stuck. And today, whatever we call ourselves, Yankee Doodle is part of our heritage. Maybe our folks landed at Plymouth Rock. Maybe it was Ellis Island. But New England is the way we came. Josh Billings could have been talking about any of us when he described a real live Yankee.
A real live Yankee is full of character and sizzling hot with enterprise. He looks at the pyramid, calculates its height, weight, wonders how he can sell it for a profit in Boston.
He loves liberty with a red pepper enthusiasm. Believes New England can whip the universe.
Why, he's as chock full of opinions as a puddin' is raisins. He keeps his finger in every pie, even the workings of Providence.
Like Uncle Ezra, who once prayed for rain. Oh, Lord, we need rain bad. Send us rain. But mind you, what we want's a drizzling, drizzling, sozzling rain. We don't want any ripping, rearing, tearing rain that'll harrow up the face of nature. We want rain, all right, Lord, but not a flood. You hear?
Cocky, callow, wily, opinionated, lovable. The Yankee of song and story. This is our heritage, our national character. We are Yankee Doodle, Ethan Allen, Daniel Webster, P.T. Barnum, Uncle Sam rolled into one. But if this is one side of our collective face, there is another, a soberer one. Deeper go our roots than Yankee Doodle.
What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou thinkest of him? Yet thou hast made him but little lower. Thou hast made him little lower than the angels.
This is our heritage, too. Our founding fathers brought it with them, the wisdom of another breed of men, another climate. They were a God-driven people. They lived by the Ten Commandments. God had made them in his image, they believed, and nothing could come between them and God. Like the Israelites of old, they defied a king, and with the Bible as a rudder, set sail to found a new world. 102 men and women. This is our beginning as Americans. Yours and mine. 102 men and women and a book that few of them could read. And when a settlement took shape, it was to this book that they turned for the law and order that kept them from anarchy that first howling winter.
The Lord's song, how sing shall we within a foreign people's land, Jerusalem, if I do thee forget, let my right hand cleave, let my tongue to my palate, if I do not in mind thee bear, if I, Jerusalem, do not above my chiefest joy prefer.
It's true, few of our pilgrim fathers could read the Bible, but in the strangeness and the wildness all around them, it was the one familiar thing. It became the loom upon which they spun out their daily lives. They wove it into the nursery rhymes they sang their children.
Young Obadiah, David, Josiah, all were pious. God is great and God is good, so always do what he thinks you should.
Yes, into nursery rhymes and into the laws that you and I are happy to live by today.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The chair recognizes the member from Massachusetts.
Gentlemen, we have before us for ratification by members of this Congress that document entitled A Declaration of Independence. I would make but one suggestion as to a change in the document as it now stands. Will you please refer to the last sentence of the declaration beginning, "And for support of this declaration, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Gentlemen, in the light of our heritage and our habits, I would add to this sentence the single phrase, "with a firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence."
With a firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence, we pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Mind you, I'm not forgetting the bad things, the whipping posts, the pillory, the hangings, all done in the name of God. One thing saved us, our deep-rooted belief in the supreme right of the individual. The Puritans had talked back to the King of England when he abused this right, and in the same spirit, men like Roger Williams talked back to the Puritans.
Lords, brethren of the court,
You ask me whether I will renounce my beliefs. I will not. I go further. I say that any law you may pass which tells a man what to believe is against God's law. Man's conscience does not come under your law, but under heaven's.
Who today remembers the names of his judges? This is what we remember. We remember the Rhode Island colony that Roger Williams founded and the tough and stubborn roots of freedom he planted there. We remember that it was there at Newport that the Jews, living descendants of the ancient Israelites, escaping from persecution, found a home. It was there that they founded the synagogue, loved, married, bore children, died, and were buried. 200 years later, the poet Longfellow saw their gravestones and put into poetry what he felt.
The very names recorded here are strange, a foreign accent and of different clime. Alvarez and Rivera interchange with Abraham and Jacob of old time.
But long before Longfellow, a sweeter epitaph had been written for these Newport Jews. A man named Ezra Stiles, while serving as the president of Yale University, had written their language, Hebrew, into the curriculum. More than that, the earliest laws of the New Haven colony acknowledged its Hebraic legacy.
In the beginning of the foundation of this plantation, it was agreed, concluded, and settled as a fundamental law that the judicial laws of God, as they were delivered by Moses and expounded by the Scripture, shall be a constant direction for all proceedings here, and a general rule for all courts.
This is our heritage. We are Yankee Doodle, Roger Williams, John Alden, the Newport Jews, all in one. Whatever we call ourselves, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Irish, Polish, Negro, Yankee, we came this way. The habits, the values, the laws, the language planted so long ago in one small corner of the globe, New England, were to infect a nation. Some folks say it was the Yankee peddler that carried New England to the rest of the country. Anyway, as soon as there were roads to walk along, there was the peddler, pack on his back, hawking the handiwork of his spinning, weaving, whittling, contriving, swapping kinsmen.
Say, Si, how much do you want for that there bay mare?
Well, let me see. Figure about $15.
Mighty cheap, ain't it? What's wrong with the mare?
Well, I won't lie to you. That there mare, she's got a good mouth. Legs is all right. Nice color. Clever's a heap.
Yeah?
But she's got 2 faults, and, well, I just don't like her.
Well, what be the fault, Silas?
Oh, I'm going to be fair with you now. Tell you what I'll do. I'll tell you 1 fault before we trade, and the other right after.
Well, that sounds fair enough. All right, what's the first fault?
First fault? She's a little bit hard to catch.
Well, that don't make no never mind to me. All right, now, what's the second one?
I said after we trade. Let me see your money.
Oh, yes. Well, here it is. All right, come on now, Si. What's the second fault?
It's a deal now. You sure?
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm sure.
All right, I'll tell you. Like I said, first, she's hard to catch. And she ain't good for nothing when you do catch her.
There was a frog lived in the spring. Sing song, Patty, won't you kind me, yo? He had such a cold he couldn't sing. Sing song, Patty, won't you kind me, yo?
No one was ever like him, the fabulous Yankee peddler. He was made for all situations and places. He sold salmon from the Kennebec to the people of Charleston, ice from Alden's Pond to the West Indies. Ready to start for Timbuktu tomorrow morning, he was missionary to his country and factotum to the world.
Kymo, caro, delto, caro, kymo, caro, kymo, scrimp, scrum, papa, diddle, there by the rigadum, rigdum, bottom in the kymeo.
But if the Yankee peddler, palming off his wooden nutmegs, brought New England to the country also caught the New England conscience. Out of our Puritan pioneers has come our ceaseless search for a moral meaning to life, our relentless grappling with good and evil. Melville
symbolized it in his white whale, Moby Dick. Hawthorne in the scarlet letter. But there were others, too. For in New England in the middle of the 19th century, there burst forth such a flowering as the world has seldom seen. There was Emerson, plunging like a diver into his own soul to sound its depths.
I see not any road of perfect peace a man can walk, but after the counsel of his own bosom. Our faith comes in moments. Our vice is habitual. Yet there is a depth in those brief moments which constrains us to ascribe more reality to them than to all other experiences. A man is the facade of a temple wherein all wisdom and all good abide. When the soul breathes through our intellect, it is genius. When it breathes through our will, it is virtue. When it flows through our affection, it is love. Men of character are the conscience of the society to which they belong. The life of man is the true romance. All around us, what powers are wrapped up under the coarse mattings of custom. It is so wonderful to our neurologists that a man can see without his eyes that it does not occur to them that it is just as wonderful that he should see with them. And that is ever the difference between the wise and the unwise. The latter wonders at what is unusual. The wise man wonders at the usual.
Preacher, teacher, poet, scholar, sage. Emerson was the yeast and the ferment of his time. And his mark was upon all the others. Orcutt, Margaret Fuller, Channing, Holmes, Dana, Lowell, Beecher. Most of all, his mark was upon his cranky, self-sufficient neighbor, Henry David Thoreau. One windy March, Thoreau borrowed Bronson Orcutt's axe and chopped down some pine trees. He returned the axe, making sure it was sharper than he found it. Then he built himself a hut on Walden Pond in Concord and sat down to write a book. No fancy title. Just plain Walden, he called it.
I would rather sit in a pumpkin and have it to myself than be crowded on a velvet cushion. The masses of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. And if it proved mean, why then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it. Or if it were sublime, to know it by my experience and be able to give a true account of it in my next excursion. This I have learned by my experiment. If a man advances confidently in the direction of his dreams to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in his common hours. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it's because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away.
Thoreau stepped to the music that he heard, and so doing, he left his imprint on us and on the world. On one occasion, he refused to pay his taxes to a government that tolerated slavery. They came to get him.
I'm sorry, Henry, but you'll have to come along. Better get your hat.
You know I haven't got a hat, John.
Well, then, come along like you are. Say, that's nice bean fields you got there.
What are you going to do with me, John?
Lock you up, I reckon.
Then I better put out the fire. My dinner's cooking.
Well, you take your time. They told me to bring you in, but they didn't say when.
Good, then I'll fetch my notebook and a pencil.
Thoreau spent one night in Concord jail. And that was the night he began his famous essay on civil disobedience. They say John Brown read it before he left Concord for Harper's Ferry. A century later, it was read, too, by a wizened little man across the world, Mahatma Gandhi. Maybe it helped to set India free. Up this way, they tell another story about Thoreau. Maybe it's true, maybe not, but it sounds like him. When he lay dying, his friends and relatives crowded round his bedside. One of the good brethren of Concord was worried about his soul.
Now, Henry, I don't mean to be impertinent, but have you made your peace with God?
I wasn't aware, Joshua, that he and I had ever quarreled.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me.
Out of the flowering of New England, out of the roots of our beginnings, came poetry too. Longfellow, Whittier, Russell, Lowell, Holmes, and Emily Dickinson, the Amherst spinster. Weaving her songs out of her loneliness and her inward visions.
I never saw a moor. I never saw the sea. Yet know I now how heather looks and what a wave must be. I never spoke with God, nor visited in heaven. Yet certain am I of the spot, as if a chart were given.
Today, in our time of trial and search, the tradition lives on in other voices. Up in Amherst again, it lives on in a New England schoolteacher, farmer, poet, Robert Frost.
They cannot scare me with their empty spaces between stars, or stars void of human races. I have it in me so much nearer home to scare myself with my own desert places.
What is man that thou art mindful of him?
The tradition lives on, too, in our language and in our laws, our habits and our values, and in our conscience, too. Whatever we call ourselves here in New England is both the root and the flower. Whether our ancestors landed at Plymouth Rock or Ellis Island, here is our spiritual homeland, the way we came.
Thou hast made him but little lower than the angels.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. George N. Friedlander, prominent Boston civic leader and president of the Northern New England region of the Jewish Theological Seminary, Mr. Friedlander.
The message of today's broadcast is summed up in the title, The Root and the Flower. We know that the ability of a flower to survive depends on how deeply and firmly it is rooted. No matter how it may be tossed and trampled, if the root is true, the flower will always bloom. We see another example of the same principle in our own family. If we succeed in planting the right ideas firmly in the hearts and minds of our children, we know that they will grow into happy adults, that they will become useful, good members of the community. Of course they will have problems, often serious problems. Nevertheless, we know that we can overcome any difficulty if the right basic concepts are deeply rooted in the child. The same principle applies to our society. The world is beset with grave problems. We live in an atmosphere of uncertainty and fear for tomorrow. But grave problems have confronted our country from the moment the pilgrims first set foot on the New England shores and throughout our history. We have not only survived, but we have become a mighty nation. We have become a nation to whom the free world looks for leadership. The flower of American democracy is strong because it has strong roots. Its roots are in the Bible. Let us therefore confront our problems and the fears today, as did our New England forebears, in the spirit of the prophet Jeremiah. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream, and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green, and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit.
Thank you, Mr. Friedlander. Our eternal light drama, The Root and the Flower, was written by Virginia Mazur and was broadcast through WBZ Boston. It starred the distinguished actor Raymond Massey as the narrator. Others in the cast were Alexander Scorby, Conrad Jameson, William Siren, and Nelson Bragg. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. The music was written and sung by Tom Glazer. Your announcer, Streeter Stewart. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Henry Lundquist. Today's program was partly based on a treasury of New England folklore edited by B.A. Botkin and printed by Crown Publishers. Also, the complete works of Robert Frost published by Henry Holden Company. This is the NBC Radio Network.